But first, it must be satisfying to be asked to establish a whole new venture drawn from your own expertise and experience, and to be asked that towards the end of your working life. But that's exactly what was offered to Nick Warner, a veteran public servant who, as of December 2018, became the Director General of the Office of National Intelligence, or ONI. He began work at the Department of Foreign Affairs and he went on to one of the new super agencies, now sub agencies, the Office of National Assessments, ONA. He's been ambassador in various postings, Iran and PNG, and he was in overall charge of our mission to stabilise the Solomon Islands, Ramsi, in the early 2000s. Now, we don't hear much from him at all because he really does work in the famous shadows that are occupied by our intelligence community, though his name has been mentioned as playing a role in the 2004 East Timor spy incidents that are still playing out via those Witness K issues. He's usually dubbed our chief spy. He doesn't give many interviews at all. He's now taken on this whole new responsibility for coordinating our ability to watch the world for threats. I managed to catch up with him in his Canberra office in the lovely Robert Marsden Hope building, and I asked him whether the job was quite what he'd imagined.
Yes, I set up the Office of National Intelligence, ONI, on the 20th of December last year, but I set that up after a year of preparatory work. Is it what I expected? It's exactly what I expected, because our mandate, our authorities are set out in legislation.
I want, like you, if you would, to describe it to Australians who I think are deliberately kept, I understand, at arm's length from fully understanding how our national intelligence community operates, because that seemed to be in the interests of security. So help us understand why there needed to be this big restructure.
Okay. So 40 years ago, the Office of National Assessments was established. The Office of National Assessments has been Australia's all-source intelligence assessment organisation. ONI continues to carry out that role, but its additional functions and authorities go to the integration, the coordination and the evaluation of the entirety of Australia's intelligence community, called the National Intelligence Community, NIC, of 10 agencies. The intelligence review that led to this change found that, or concluded, that the national intelligence community of, let's say, 7,000 to 8,000 people with a budget of $2 to $3 billion needed to be handled as a major enterprise, because it was a major enterprise. It found that the individual intelligence agencies, all 10 of them, were highly capable, they were full of highly skilled professionals, and that they did work well together. But in the dramatically changing world that we're living in, there was a real need for better coordination and better integration. So that's the role of the Office of National Intelligence.
Yes, that business about being managed as a major enterprise made me think what was not being managed then, which is being managed now, in your view.
So the agencies were world-class. They were doing a fantastic job in their particular areas of authority and expertise, and they were coordinated and they were working well together. But as the review said, the whole should be greater than the sum of the parts. So that's what ONI is trying to do. It's trying to pull them together in a way that's never been done before, to set intelligence priorities, to undertake strategic workforce planning, to do joint capability planning, to come up with and find ways of funding joint capability between and for the 10 respective agencies, to pull together in one place the intelligence reporting from these 10 agencies, which we now do in an intelligence daily to the Prime Minister and others. So treat what is an enterprise as an enterprise.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but ONI's work, I mean, from its origins, was focused on external threats, weren't they? But with this new agency, you also have more of a domestic focus, and I wonder how that might work in practice. And of course, I'm thinking, and I don't expect you to be specific, but with someone like the Christchurch shooter that straddles, you know, both external and internal.
So you're right, but not quite right. So the Office of National Assessments did, for the last 40 years, primarily have an external function. So ONA looked at what's the situation in Syria, what do we think is going to happen in the elections in Pakistan, what do we think is going to happen to the global economy. Where ONI is different to ONA in this respect is that the national intelligence community that I talked about of 10 agencies includes agencies like the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission, AUSTRAC, which does financial flows, the intelligence element of the Australian Federal Police, and the intelligence division of the Home Affairs Department. Those four agencies, and ASIO, which is part of the traditional intelligence community, have much more of a domestic focus than the traditional intelligence agencies had. ONI's role is to pull all of those together, including their analysis, and that analysis will be of, could be, on drug running syndicates, child exploitation, and linkages overseas and in Australia. So you're right to say that ONI has something more of a domestic focus, but it's not because that's the work we're doing. It's that we are helping coordinate a community that has a broader remit than the mandate of the previous Australian intelligence community.
I wonder how much it does help Australia manage this extremely complex environment. I mean, I could give a list of what I'd see as challenges, but I'd like to hear how you enumerate them and the weightings you give them.
Yeah. I thought you might ask me this question. So look, let me start with a broad comment and then I'll go into a number of specific challenges. Look, I would argue, ONI would argue that Australia's strategic environment is changing quickly and significantly, and that Australia is facing some of the most challenging strategic circumstances that it has for decades. The world is more complex and arguably the world is more dangerous than it was. I could give you an almost endless list of challenges, but here's 9 or 10 of them. China-US competition is intensifying, obviously, and that's playing out in very many ways. The current trade war is one. Transformative technology is clearly another. The Indo-Pacific, our region, has become the epicenter of intensifying great power competition. And again, that's primarily China and the United States. Moving around, India-Pakistan, the terrorist attack that took place in Pulwama on the 14th of February, that saw mobilization of military forces in both countries. That tension has receded, but it hasn't gone away. It's something we watch very closely.
And the bloody
closely.
Face of the Indian pilot downed and so on.
That's right, exactly.
Yes.
North Korea, after the Trump-Kim Jong-un summit in Hanoi, we think President Trump did exactly the right thing in walking away on that occasion. But let's face it, we're a very long way now, again, from complete verifiable and irreversible disarmament. Moving on, the rules-based order is under threat. The power of states rather than the rules that inform the behavior of states is more important than it used to be. There's the all the challenges of the South Pacific. And, you know, with PNG, a country now of 8 or 9 million people in 20 years plus, that's going to be a population of 20 million. And its issues and problems will impact more directly on Australia than they have at any time since independence in 1975. There's the whole question of accelerating technological change that's not only changing the business of intelligence, it's changing the entire world. things like nanotechnology, quantum computing, synthetic biology, facial recognition, gait recognition, the whole gamut of technological change. We watch that very carefully, and its impact on the world, on our strategic environment, is profound now and will continue to be profound in the years and decades ahead. And then there's the question of terrorism. Australia faces serious ongoing threats from terrorism, whether they're from right-wing extremism or from Islamist extremism. The tragedy of Christchurch, the fact that there was an Australian link.
That we didn't pick.
That nobody picked.
Does that worry you?
Well, you'd always like to be able to pick up on individuals like that, of course. But it's not just the tragedy of Christchurch, it's what's happening in northeast Syria after the taking of that last ISIL stronghold in Baghouz, the camps that are housing the women and the children and the fighters who have fled from Baghouz are now enormous. They're straining at the seams. The number of foreign fighters that are housed in those camps is a great concern to us. Will they get back to Europe? Will they get back to Australia? Will they get back to Southeast Asia? These remain big and serious issues to Australia. There's probably another 90 or 100 we could talk about.
So compare and contrast other times that have worried you. I mean, were you kept awake more at night, to use a colloquial phrase, before or now?
I think what's different now is the number of challenges that we face, not just Australia faces, really the world faces. It's much more diverse now. It's not just the Soviet Union. It's not just terrorism. It's a whole range of issues.
And is it because the great powers have shifted? You know, it's different now. It was, dare I say, more simple in the past.
Yeah, the great powers have shifted, but as I said before, technology is playing a part in this too. Just iPhones, the ability of people to communicate, the ability of people to move money around.
Look, I know you and other colleagues put in quite some effort last year to engage with the business community that was becoming extremely concerned about the public emphasis being put on fears about the behaviour of certain Chinese groups. And you did try to sort of bridge some of those gulfs between you. Were you changed by those interactions? Did they affect your thinking?
So this intelligence review that I talked about before said that one of the things that ONI should do is to reach out both to expertise in academia, but also to reach out to Australian business. And in respect of Australian business, the objective was twofold. Firstly, because we could learn from Australian multinationals who were operating in diverse parts of the world, that would be helpful for our understanding of what was going on. Secondly, though, because it's important for Australians, for Australian business, to understand how we see the world. You know, we're not a policy agency or department. What we do is simply tell the Australian government how we see the world, and that's what we're doing with business. So I've been doing a lot of that in the last 16 months or so.
Press did think the intelligence community had hijacked the debate. I think that was one little phrase.
Yeah, I've heard that phrase around, and I don't really understand it. What the Australian, what any intelligence assessment organisation does is produce assessments based on all sources, tells truth to power. It doesn't look at worst-case scenarios.
Doesn't it? Because I've been told that is exactly what a good intelligence officer does.
Exactly what we don't do. What we do is tell the government how we see the situation now and how we think it will develop. Not the worst case, what we think actually is happening now, what actually will happen in the future. If you go around putting forth worst-case scenarios all the time, you will alarm, and probably alarm needlessly. So that is exactly what we don't do.
Is there a tension, in other words, which is what the business community feels? There is a tension between advancing the country's business interests and actually balancing them against security concerns. I mean, do you see a tension there?
So you're talking about China.
I am talking about China.
So let me put it this way. China's rise, vitally important to Australia, to Australia's economic prosperity, has been, is now, will be in future. Second key point, I think, under Xi Jinping, China has become increasingly confident and she is determined to deliver China's national rejuvenation, he said, by 2049. I think what we have to always bear in mind is that we have different political values. And if we, as Australians, are cognizant of that, we can better manage the challenges that will inevitably occur in the bilateral relationship from time to time.
So the more we articulate our values and know who we are, not necessarily aggressively, am I hearing you properly? They actually will help in the business of managing security.
Yeah, that's right. Certainly not aggressively, but understanding our values, understanding that our political systems are different, is the basic starting point.
This is Saturday Extra's summer edition, where we're bringing you some of the highlights of 2019. You can catch all of our interviews online via the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back to regular programming on January the 25th. Look, there have been concerns too about whether groups like ONI could become oppressive around privacy issues, for instance, whether there's a risk of intelligence agencies reaching into ordinary Australians' private and political lives. And I presume you have to balance the need to be heavy-handed with security. And the Saturday paper asked the key question, who monitors the monitor? You're the big monitor. Who monitors you?
So I'm not the big monitor, but let me go back a few steps. This is the sort of age-old question. There's a delicate balance between civil liberties and security. Ever since there have been intelligence agencies, since there have been democracies, this has been an issue. And the right way forward is to find the right balance between those two things, and that's the job of government. So who are we accountable to? There are 10 intelligence agencies. They work to five of them to the Home Affairs Minister, one of them to the Foreign Minister, three of them to the Defence Minister, and ONI to the Prime Minister. Secondly, the traditional intelligence agencies also appear before the Joint Parliamentary Committee on Intelligence and Security, PJCIS. Mm-hmm. For most of them, that is for administrative and budgeting reasons, not operational matters.
You said ONI's assessment focus will remain at the strategic rather than the individual level. That was your submission, I noticed, to that committee.
Yep,
I think I know. What does that mean?
Sorry, can I just finish? Mm-hmm. And then the key accountability body for the Australian National Intelligence Community is the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security, Margaret Stone. IGIS has very, very intrusive powers.
That's like a running royal commission in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, they're like the powers of a royal commission. So can look at anything at any time. Those three accountability arrangements together, I think, provide that balance that I was talking about before. I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, well, it's just that I noticed that in the Parliament submission to the committee, the PM&C and ONA submission, this was ONA, in performing this new function, we may have access to a greater amount of personal information relating to Australians. However, ONI's assessment focus will remain at the strategic rather than the individual level. Now, people who worry about whether you've got too much access to individual media, social media sites, for instance,
right,
they will be wanting to know what you mean by that.
So like any government agency, privacy rules are up on our website. They're ticked off by the government. Those rules make it very clear what we can access and what we can't access and what we can do with what we can lawfully and rightfully access. ONI is a broad strategic intelligence assessment agency. It's not interested in individuals. It's interested in broad sweeping trends overseas, not in Australia.
Right. Because, I mean, this is not theoretical, is it? There are key questions of trust involved, I'd suggest to you. Groups within Australia have to believe they're not being singled out disproportionately, especially in these days with much greater presumed transparency. I mean, we deal with this at the ABC. I mean, do you sense that there's been a shift in values like this?
No, I don't think so. I think it's this age-old, tension. The delicate balance between invading the privacy of a few in the interests of the country as a whole. It's for governments to set the accountability arrangements. It's for governments to draw up the laws and mandates that govern agencies like ONI, which the government and the parliament did last year. I think the world is changing, but I don't think that... That tension, that arrangement...
You don't think?
..is changing.
Hmm. Look, you brief the PM daily, I understand. I wonder, how will you judge if you've been successful in this new role? I'm just keen to see how you see it.
So as I've said, there are two key roles for ONI. One is the assessment side, and secondly is this coordination, integration, evaluation of the intelligence community. With intelligence assessment, it's not so hard. Did we get it right? Did we pick what was happening to the ISIL caliphate and the emergence of the insurgency in Syria and Iraq, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Well, are we? We haven't got to that point yet. But look, ONA and ONI assessments are of the highest quality. They're world class, always have been, are today. ONA, ONI, full of experts in their field who are highly professional and produce the highest quality work. On that second mandated function, the proof will be whether we can really create this enterprise, this national intelligence community. I think we're well on track. We've been given the tools, we've been given the resources, we've been given the legislative mandate to do it. It's not that we're starting from scratch. There's been good work done to get us to this point over the last 40, 50, 60 years. There is a real desire and willingness within this national intelligence community of 10 agencies, 7,000 people, to make this work. There's been no pushback. People see value, agencies see value in coordination, they see value in greater integration. They see value in us helping them come up with a strategic workforce plan. They see value in us coming up with a joint capability plan and to build joint capability. All those things are happening now. I've said to people who've come into ONI and in the broader community, there's probably been no better time to join the intelligence community because it is so professional, it does such great work, but it is under a process of evolution that is going to make it even stronger.
Do you want them to say that I work for ONI, or do you imagine they'll still say I work for ASIS or ASD?
Well, I'll tell you what's happening in ONI. This is the first place and time it's ever happened in the Australian intelligence community. It's becoming a melting pot. So the whole 10 agencies have come together in this one organisation for the first time. And I think if we come back in 5 or 10 years' time, the effect of that will have been quite profound, because I will have been sitting here as a junior officer talking to you, and you've come from a different agency, and I will say, well, wow, that sounds interesting. I think I'll head off there. That just by itself is going to help build the sense of a real community, so people won't say, I'm just an ONI officer or an ASIS officer or an ASIO officer. They'll be saying, I'm a member of the national intelligence community.
Like a big public hospital.
I'll give you one example. We, for the first time a couple of weeks ago, we had the inaugural National Intelligence Community Awards. We had 120, 150 people here from across the range of agencies receiving awards. It's a small thing, but it's symbolically really important. and was an opportunity to celebrate the success, and there have been some extraordinary successes, of individuals, of teams, of agencies, and teams of agencies over the past year.
Well, Nick Warner, it might be good to talk to you in another 5 years and see how it has gone. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
That's Nick Warner, the Director General of the Office of National Intelligence, speaking to me earlier last year. And look, I don't know that I'll get the chance to speak to him again, given that that whole office has become rather more controversial. We had two ex-prime ministers, Paul Keating and Tony Abbott, arguing, if you recall, in November in 2019 about the respective roles of the security agencies versus the diplomats in terms of our engagement with the world. And I suspect that people like Nick Warner won't want to speak to us, which is a pity. But I suspect that'll be the case.